Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I apologize, first of all, for being late to log in, as life has got me doing any which way but loose. I just had to go to the supermarket to get all of the shopping done for the weekend. Actually, when I go shopping, it's getting everything done at one shot, so that we don't have to continue going out multiple times, because that way there we stay safe and whatever. In today's episode, you're embarking upon the very first episode, well, not the first episode, but this is the first time on air that I'm going to be doing Throwback Thursday, F4L edition, in which, you know, I'm going to be telling old, you know, I guess my grandmother used to call them old war stories, which is kind of telling about things that happened in the past that were kind of groundbreaking, you know, times in my life, really impactful portions of my life, some of which, you know, are kind of what led to me making and formatting the F4L to begin with, which is actually our topic today, which I'm going to give you guys a history of how the F4L itself began, kind of give you the origin story. Those of you guys who've watched or listened to this show for a little while, you're probably familiar with me talking about the F4L and, you know, whatnot. But I'm not 100% sure on how many people actually have done and know about what the F4L is. I think in time and over passing, I've mentioned it here and there. But sometimes when you hear something, you know, you might go along with it just because it's just there. The title of this whole show over here is the F4L Headquarters. Well, some of you might want to know, like, what is the headquarters? How does it differentiate? What is that? And the long and short answer of it, and excuse me as I'm, right now I'm walking around putting everything away because my wife is coming home from work. I want to make sure everything is put away nicely for her when she gets here. Just bear with me. 1 second. Oh, I apologize. I actually got some water just recently. So I'm going to pull that out as I wear there. I have some as I'm talking to you guys, which I'm really excited about to tell you guys about this stuff here. Now, a lot of people, like I said, have heard me say the phrase in the F4L, and I think I've done a pretty decent job with, in the past, bringing it up. Maybe you remember me talking with Michael Fishman, our very first guest here on the All New Podcast, and asking, you know, telling him maybe you should join the F4L, as the F4L is, you know, part of, you know, the movement, and what does it mean to be F4L, and so forth. I told him that he kind of had and showed the F4L model and code, and, you know, and I explained, and he has learned and learned over the time working with Michael Fishman and talking with him and sharing with him kind of how that works on my end. But you guys, this is my show, so I wanted to, you know, explain, you know, and give you guys the detailed, you know, origin of what is known as the F4L, the lifestyle and the group of people in which, you know, are cool enough to call themselves F4L, and also the rare amount of people that can actually call themselves F4L. Of course, there's all kinds of, you know, ups and downs we've had to face, and you can understand that not everyone can understand what it is to be F4L. Not everyone gets the kind of moral message that we're about, or they get it confused. That happens too, right? So, happens a lot, actually. So, I'm just shutting my phone down, even though you're on my computer right now and you're listening to on the thing. I'm actually sitting finally since coming home. Priorities, don't you know? Oh, I'm just letting the wife know that the door is open, so she knows not to worry about that end of it. That's exciting. Just found out I got my deposit, which is nice. I like getting paid. Work just paid me. That's nice also. I just found that out as I'm on the phone with you guys. Anywho. All right. I've taken care of that. And I apologize again. Late logging in. That's not something I'm usually used to. I think I talked to you guys before about the importance of, well, I believe the importance of punctuality. Punctuality is something that I can take pride in. Any job I've ever had, in the majority of the, all of the places, have one thing they can always depend on is the fact that if I'm on the schedule, they know I'm going to show up and I'm going to show up early. And that has always been something that has kind of been my calling card and my staple. It kind of makes me the makeup that makes up me. So there you have that. You know, so a lot of the times for work, I'll be an hour early. But anyway, that we're not talking about, we're going back in time. And you're here today because we're talking about the origin of the F4L itself, how it came to be, how it formed, the people that formed it, why they formed it, me being the one who started it. But I wasn't the one who named it, believe it or not. And we're going to talk about, you know, the backlash, because not everything, you know, is all sunshine and rainbows, as you can probably imagine, like everything else in life. I took a sip of my water. It's really good. Sparkling water, actually. All right. So. All right. Now. So the order to take, to understand kind of how the F4L began or started in general, first you have to go back to kind of my upbringing, but we're not going to go too deep because, you know, we're not here to talk about, you know, my past. We're here to tell you about the origin of the F4L. So I'm going to give you the cliff notes. And the, basically to sum this piece up, there's an old saying. I don't know who came up with this saying, but part of, you know, one of my missions early on was to challenge that old quote. The quote goes, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. I think that is the that is absolute hogwash. That is absolutely not true. And my mission at that time was to change that. Because at the time, before the F4L began, I was part of a very dysfunctional, unorganized, hateful group of people, which are my blood family. They didn't follow, they didn't have any of the morals of what I would call the F4L. And I felt, honestly, that they didn't even know what a family should be. A lot of people were deceitful. They were lying. They were not trustworthy. They were manipulating. They were disrespectful. They were, you know, just miserable people. And, you know, what I've come to learn is that what I was seeing as a young kid growing up is that this is not who I am. This is not what I'm about. I don't feel like I belong with these people. I don't agree with the way they think. I don't act the way they do. And just so you know, what happens there, even at a young age, I'm viewed as kind of the black sheep of the family, I guess, one of them. My mother would be the ultimate black sheep first, and then her kids would be under that umbrella, as according to the rest of the family. Due to the fact my mother was a young mother, and when she had me, she was not married at the time. So back in the 80s, early 80s, that was kind of an unheard of, unorganized, and kind of a disgraceful thing, supposedly. Now that's a norm sometimes, in essence of things. So there's that. Excellent. The wife just came home, by the way. Hi, honey. How was your day? Excellent. So she's coming. She just came home. She's had a long day at work. Now she gets to sit back and relax. As you can hear the show, this is my life, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, so I was giving you guys the origin of the F4L. Here we go. All right. So I already explained. So the family, my blood family, were not in any way, shape, or form what family should be. So I set out to challenge that. And honestly, the real help that came for me was the fact that when I was about 11, up until about 11, I had to first realize what a friend was versus, you know, how do you become acceptable and how do you, how, what makes someone a friend versus, you know, whatnot. See, when I was in elementary school and I was a younger person, I always thought that if people laughed and whatever, and, you know, people, you know, greeted you or whatever, they obviously had respect for you and they liked you. They considered you a friend or whatever. I honestly don't like to see people sad or upset. So what I do is I would make them happy in any way I could. Like, I can't stand to see people cry. So I would, as an elementary school guy, and also part of my makeup is being the goal guy. So one of my first goals was to not only be the number one, I couldn't be just the class clown. That wasn't good enough. I had to be the number one school clown. But here's what comes along with that. People often mistake that for, you know, what a friends are, what is, what's socially acceptable, I guess, quote. You know, so I would go to great lengths to make someone laugh or make someone, you know, a thing. And it wasn't just good enough for the class. I had to get the whole school to do so. So a lot of the antics that I would do in elementary school, you know, might have been considered, you know, strange, odd behavior that, you know, got laughs. So that's which was my goal. But what I didn't understand was at that time, the people who laugh at me versus with me. Because to this day, there's certain antics that I took part of in the in my elementary school days that they still talk about to this day in those very schools. It's because of me that they had to define what you could and couldn't bring to show and tell in that school. And I found this out when I was working. Many years later, I've already kind of established myself as an adult. And I've already gone around and done various different charity works in this time. And I've already achieved quite a few goals, including graduating high school with honors. But and I also formed the F4L at that point. But what happened was, because of how I behaved in elementary school, a lot of people who, you know, back then, they still remember that person versus who I am today. And a lot of people can't get past that. I could. So that's the first lesson. And the phrase I came up with to learn about, just kind of help myself figure out who's a real friend versus who the fake ones are. And the saying goes like this: real friends don't kick you when you're down, they help you up. I've had a lot of hard times, and only a handful of people are there when the back's against the wall. There's only a very few amount of people that I can go to if I have an issue, something I get to talk about, something I get off my chest. Well, that kind of brings up to what the F4L is, because that's kind of how you figure out what a friend is first, and that's kind of what I went with. When I was about 11, 12, and then 13, I started, you know, becoming the social person. And I actually started leaving the house for my stepfamily, which is very descriptive people. Part of that blood, I guess I roped them into the blood family, as they are considered, you know, they're married to, within the family. They're considered family, I guess. But, like, you know, I was partly embarrassed to bring any real friends to my house because my brothers or my sister or my other relatives, stepfather relatives, would do nothing but embarrass me or do something disruptive, even hurt or threaten bodily harm on my friends who came to the house. And partly it, what it, you know, kind of what it was is who's brave enough to go back into this house after they already, you know, have been. Like my best friend who's no longer with us, one of my early, before even the F4L, he, to his credit, he came to the house. And I remember the first time hanging out, and he got to meet my family. My youngest brother, who had a tendency to fly off the tent, off the handle, for no apparent reason, he decided it was a social, it was acceptable for him to chase my new friend down the street in his bare feet in the snow with a butcher knife. Yep, welcome to my family. That's my life, ladies and gentlemen. It is not a fun. That was kind of why I couldn't bring friends to the house. So obviously what I had to do is be outside the house. And I realized that I was more comfortable being around my friends than I was at my family. The quote family, the one that was I was given, not, you know, whatever. And I think that the same thing goes with respect. And respect isn't something you just give, even though success, you know, history and you know, the proper things, you know, you're supposed to respect this and that. And what I found is, in my experience, is I feel that you need to earn the respect rather than just give it. Because if I was to give the respect to the adults in my life at a young age, then they wouldn't be people who would be worthy of respect. They were people who were liars, manipulators, deceitful, bullying a kid like myself, discouraging people like myself, putting me down because I was creative versus, you know, encourage that. Talk about each other behind their backs, and then when they're together, they talk about the other people who aren't there. That's not what I'm about, and that's not something I'm going to embark upon. So when I was about 13, 14, as I've already told the story, I left home at 15. But 13 and 14 is when I started figuring out who my friends are and, you know, who are, you know, what makes a good friend. And I kept that to myself kind of to see. And then I realized that those groups of people that I called my friends had similar backgrounds to myself. They had similar families who were also, you know, not necessarily supportive and whatnot, which is also sad. I think it's important in life you have at least one person in your corner that you can go to with something. I think it's important to, you know, succeed in life to have at least one person that you know you can rely on, one person you can go to any time of the day or night and just say, hey, I need help with this, or can I talk to you about something? And, you know, those kinds of things there. Now, when I was 14 was when I started meeting the people who would become part of the original F4L. And then at 15, of course, I was now homeless, as we've already talked about that. And I was forced to live in a group home at the time, and then in a shelter. While I was in the group home and the shelter, I would meet the people who would actually form the F4L, the founders. And oddly enough, as I've said before, I may be considered the leader of the F4L, but I am not the only person responsible for it. The original F4L, believe it or not, there were more than four. There was actually five of us. And, you know, partly when you become F4L and you take the oath of the F4L, your kind of past life isn't really a thing, and you're kind of seen almost like reborn into the F4L. This is going to sound a little interesting to those people who can't understand it, but people have referred to us as like a religion, and we're not a religion per se, because you don't necessarily have to be religious or a believer in something to, you know, be F4L. But one thing is important is you believe in the F4L model, in the motto, and you live that F4L way every day of your life, which is you're expected to do. And those, you know, the creed goes, you know, to be F4L, you have to fight for love, caring, compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. And whatever makes them different. And that's part of what makes the F4L, the F4L, that's the bare minimum. You got to live that way every day. That could become with challenges because, you know, a lot of those things sound like very simple things to explain. But when you're us, myself and the rest of the founders, these were things that we lacked in our lives. These were things that we lacked and longed for in a family. And our own families didn't have these morals. They don't love, they may love themselves or different people, but they don't love, you know, they're not compassionate. They don't understand a lot. They're very judgmental and they're hypocrites and whatever. And that's not what the F4L is about. We were the exact opposite of what our families believed. And this was not always met with positive reactions. A lot of people would make fun of us or laugh at us because, you know, they don't understand, oh, here comes the F4L again. So the F4L, now, what is the F4L? Let's break it down for you. Because, I mean, I think a lot of people often think it's like Friends for Life, which originally was maybe how it sounded, but there's more to it. There's actually three parts to the F. So you got your friends who are your brothers and your sisters. You're no longer friends. Your friends are now your brothers and your sisters. So now you're a family unit, right? And of course, the people who support your friends will bring the friends together. and the people who maybe are too young to fit into the circle but want to be part of that, or the people who support the lifestyle but they are maybe not, you know, see each other on a regular basis, those are your fans. And when your friends and your fans are together as one, you have that immediate family. So in essence, you have the friends, fans, and family. And when you have that, it's for life. Get it? And that's the long and short of it. So we don't view each other as friends. We view each other as brothers and sisters. It's a family dynamic. And it replaces the blood sometimes. But sometimes your blood, if you have positive family members, I guess they could be considered F4L too if you live those life that those that way. Everyone can, like I said. And in order to do so, you have to live those that creed every day. It's not partly or some of. I think a lot of the times people misunderstand it for being, you know, overly pensive, you know, being, you know, peaceful. People try to bully us or think that we won't fight for something. That's also not the case. You see, part of the original creed is to fight for, because that's part of the creed as well, is you live and fight for and represent the F4L lifestyle every day. It was the full creed back in the day. So not only do you live the F4L, you also have to fight for it and fight, you know, stand up for it. If someone doesn't live the F4L way, someone's giving another F4L member a hard time, your responsibility is to back up your F4L, your family member, no matter where they are. If they're having a hard day, you reach out to that person. Hey, how you doing? That's the first response you should have. But also, if you're in a situation where your friend or your F4L member, your brother, is having a hard time, then you stand up and help that person. If you see the person bullied in school, for example, that doesn't go on very far because you're right there by his side. And despite the numbers and despite what the outcome is, you stand by your friend till the very end. And that's part of what that it is. That means, so yes, the F4L, we've fought in plenty of times, physically and verbally and whatever, because a lot of people can't understand what the F4L is. And they have a hard time kind of, you know, getting it. They think we're a bunch of hippies, or maybe we're a bunch of goody-goodies, brown nosers. These are things that were said about us because we do you consider the right things. But are they the right things always? We think so. That's just because we think those things. That's what we believe a family should be. So when I was 14 or 15, that's when I separated from my blood, and when you took the oath to be F4L, now you have your family. You have your brothers and your sisters. And it doesn't have to be someone that's right in front of you. It could be someone who lives the F4L way miles apart. So the original founders was myself, then my friend Adam, we called Ace. And also in the F4L, you kind of have your own like nickname, I guess you say, kind of like your F4L name, if you would. Because your name prior to you is kind of, you know, what your family would call you, but your F4L call you what the F4L name is. So my friend Adam was Ace, my friend Pam, the original, my sister Pam, I should say. These are all family members. My brother Adam was now Ace. My sister Pam was now Pooh Bear. My brother D-Rock, Derek was D-Rock. My brother Dustin was D-Dog. So I know, random, right? So these are kind of the formation of what the F4L would begin. That was if you counted your math correctly, then there'd be me, which I guess there was only one nickname I could have that because I already had it, and the other kids in school gave me that name, which was Jazz or JV at that time. So that was me. That was always my thing. And then it was Adam who came up with the slogan "Friends for Life." And then, you know, we lived in a group home / homeless shelter for kids like ourselves. We didn't have parents with us. We had what they called counselors or treatment people or people who worked there who not all of them got it either. A lot of them, you know, obviously look at it, can't understand it because they automatically think it's something, you know, disturbing or something mental health related. And it is also true that a lot of us in the F4L had certain mental illnesses. I'm not going to tell you everyone's, you know, downfall, everyone's weakness, if you would. But I don't think they make them weakness. This just makes us different. I'll tell you mine, as you guys already heard, I have post-traumatic stress disorder, which has a multiple different undertones into it. I would have flashbacks. I could have mood swings. I have my sleep patterns off. And, so there's a lot that goes along with that, having post-traumatic stress disorder. My memories and then the flashbacks and certain things can trigger one of those memories. I've had a really good, I've been fortunate enough to learn a lot of coping mechanisms to combat a lot of those things. But that's something that's part of my dynamic that's never going to go away. And that's something that I have to live with. My family, my actual family, my wife, my kids all know that I have such. And all honesty, they may very well have some of their own. But it makes us different and dynamic. Now, going back to the, how the F4L began. So as we started the formation, we decided we needed to have some type of way to greet each other, even if we weren't close by, because people try to keep the F4L up from forming and becoming bigger. Why? Because our families at the time saw us as a threat with each other, because we no longer viewed our blood family as family. They were kind of outsiders. They didn't live the F4L way, and partly what we're about is supporting the F4L in each other. So what would happen is if one of the other F4L members had an issue, they wouldn't go to their, guardian or whatever. I was fortunate enough to be emancipated. I didn't have anybody to go to. But them, they had, guardians or, family-like, people who would obviously try to, get in the middle between them and the F4L, who would, oppose the F4L for being kind of a threat because, you're, getting involved with, how to raise someone else's whatever, even though we're all the same age, which is odd. Now, in the F4L, the original, we kind of ranged in ages, to be honest. Adam was one of the younger members. Then it was, Pooh Bear was about my age, and I was about the same as them. And I was, Pooh Bear and Dustin, or D-Dog, as I should say, were probably the same age. We're all the same age. G-Rock and Ace were also similar to age. They were on the younger side. G-Rock, of course, would be in the middle. G-Rock was kind of the enforcer, if you would. He was the jokester of the group and also the muscle. He wasn't afraid to fight real quick for to buddies and his friends or whatever. Ace, of course, would, he had a lot of energy, Ace did. He was very, very, very energetic. And he was also the daredevil who wasn't afraid to take risks and do these, give him a bicycle and he'll try just about any trick there is, regardless of, what that may or may not do. And, Pooh Bear was a very heartfelt individual, very, caring individual. And, she took everything to heart, but she loved sports. She was like the tomboy of the group. And then D-Dog was, he was gay, which in the F4L, we don't care. We accept everyone for who they are, no matter what color, race, creed, sexual orientation, or anything else. If you're F4L, you respect the people's differences. D-Dog was gay, but he was also very fun to be with. He could talk about things. At times, he would be that flamboyant best friend that everyone wants to have. They can tell you when you're not dressing properly. D-Dog, I'll tell you this one. D-Dog was good about, making sure you matched properly when you were going out. He came up with a lot of the things. If we got together, whenever those things would be, he would kind of orchestrate what the theme would be. Everyone has to wear blue, bling, whatever. That would be kind of his forte. But he was a really interesting, he was a really cool dude. He would like to express himself a lot with his hairstyles and so forth. So he was a really cool kid. D-Rock, funny kid. Very sarcastically fun. Loved music. Very, very enthusiastic about a lot of music, a lot of the hip-hop. And everyone in the F4L has a different music taste. I love rock. Ace would go around all over the place. Pooh Bear kind of liked a little bit of everything, but she was a big fan of Tupac and Big E, I think it was. I don't know what his name is. I think his name is Big E or Biggie Smalls or whatever. But, she was into that kind of stuff. But she was also into huge sports, so she was into, the Patriots and, the different football players and stuff like that. Because she's a girl, too. She liked dudes, of course. So you know, she liked a lot of those guys. And she was also, you know, really smart girl. You know, really intelligent, loved computer, liked to be social, loved to talk. It was when she didn't get, when she didn't talk that you knew there was something wrong. And that's when you would, you know, talk to her. Hey, what's wrong? And a couple quick little things to get the understanding of, you know, the dynamic. And one of the reasons why we were met with not such great positive things. For example, we talked about the family dynamic and how they would see us as threats. My friend Ace, who was my closest in the upper world, even though we're all, you know, as a family, you always have these little family members, you're closer to the others. Ace and I were really, really tight. And Ace at one point was had a stepfather. His father, his real father had unfortunately passed away, which we'll go into it a long sometime later. But I actually dreamt of, you know, we're not even going to get into that today. That's just too long of a scenario to get into. But anyway, let's just say something happened to Ace's dad that I had already known about even before I even knew who Ace was. But in conversations or whatever, we come to realize that, you know, we knew that. And, you know, that there he has a mother and he had a sister, and his mother had met a stepfather who was into hunting and so forth. Now, one of the things about me prior to Ace and before prior to the F4L being formed is I always knew that they had that, you know, I was kind of going to be part of a group. I think there's strength in unity. And I also decided that it was time for me, when I kind of started putting groups of my friends together, that, you know, this is kind of felt right. Now, the original group that I put together was consisted of different people. We didn't have necessarily a name, but we would go to like parties and stuff to make sure everyone was safe at the parties. I know that sounds like we're goody two shoes or whatever, but like we lived in a city area in like a smaller suburb town, kind of like in the middle of both. And, you know, we came from different parts of each. Some of them came from my city. Some of them came from my old town. But we knew that sometimes at the K parties or keg parties, for those people who know, things could get out of hand. So what we decided is we were going to be that group that would get together to make sure everyone was safe at these parties. And if anyone, you know, gave anyone a hard time, someone became violent, you know, someone's safety was in jeopardy, we would step in. Prior to this, I hadn't been CPR first aid trained, although I have multiple experience at that point in the martial arts and combat, but I didn't have any like first aid skills as of yet because we were 11, 12, and 13. We didn't think we needed those things yet. To be honest, some of us didn't even know what those things were. We thought those were things what doctors did. We knew that if things got too crazy to call 911 if we couldn't handle it. Well, unfortunately, prior to the F4L being formed, and partly one of the issues that I have with my post-traumatic stress disorder is, it was one time over a summer, we had a run-in with a group of individuals who, a couple months later at a Halloween party on October 31st, yes, this is how good I am, this is why I have this memory, October 31st, 1993, and my two friends who I went to elementary school with, who we found our bond or whatever, we went to a party to make sure everything was safe. Now, three of us had been already, you know, at a party prior to that summer. We had an issue with this group who tried assaulting a couple girls, which not under our watch or not. Well, I guess in October, we went to this house party that was, you know, in between our towns, and we wanted to make sure everyone was safe. It was a Halloween party, of course, as it's Halloween. Well, when we got to the party, it was myself and two other my friends, my friend Jeremy and my friend Andy. They were all with me. And we went into this house. There was three of us, and it was supposed to be more of us, but we weren't there yet. We always remember to go to – you needed at least two or three people to go with you to go to these things. You weren't outnumbered or anything. And when we went to this house party, walked through the house, we were greeting people, and I remember, you know, Andy had gone off. He was behind me. Jeremy was in front of me. I was in the middle. And Andy had spread off to go say hello to a friend. And Jeremy and I were getting to the kitchen area, and one of the people who we had an issue with over the summer had recognized us and pulled out a gun and shot Jeremy, who was in front of me, and shot him a few times. Everyone screamed in this house. Everyone ran away.
Andy called 911 because that's what we figured we had to do. I had known certain things from TV or whatever. I know you're supposed to stop the bleeding or whatever from watching Rescue 911, which was popular when I was younger. So, of course, I had my shirt off, and I'm trying to stop the bleeding as I'm holding Jeremy, trying to get him the blood to stop. And Andy is on hold with 911, who put him on hold. Yeah, can you imagine that? 911 put him on hold on Halloween night, which is, I guess, looking back, it's Halloween. It's going to be busy, but I never thought that, you know, you could be put on hold by 911. I'm sure things have changed since then. But I tried to stop the bleeding. And, of course, you know, Andy was on hold with 911, finally got the ambulance to come. But basically, by the time the ambulance got there, Jeremy had already bled out and died, literally, as I was trying to hold him and stop him from bleeding. And he was 13 years old. I was also 13 years old, and Andy was 13 years old. So this is something we have to live with. I still remember these things, and that's why one of the reasons I'm not overly fond of guns. I don't like guns at all, but also because I was always, you know, taught if you have an issue with someone, you handle it the old school way with your hands. Well, needless to say, fast forward to where we were. Adam, or Ace, I should say, years after this, Ace and the Air Force knew kind of where I came from and what I've endured and stuff like that. I remember this very well. So Ace was turning, I think it was 16 or 15. No, actually, it was 15. I'm sorry. He was 15 when he was turning 15, and his stepfather thought it was a good idea to give him a hunting rifle because, you know, his stepfather was a hunter, and he wanted, you know, Ace to go hunting with him, I guess, is what he wanted. Even though Ace kind of likes animals and whatever and wasn't really fond of the whole shooting things, but he was adventurous. But knowing how I felt about guns, and again, his mother at the time could care less. I mean, this is her stepfather. This is her husband now, and this is his, you know, whatever he is. And of course, we're at Ace's birthday party. It was myself, Pooh Bear, D-Rock, and we're all at the party. And Ace, and I'm there, and, you know, stepfather gives him this rifle. It was supposed to be a nice one. I guess it was worth quite a bit of money. And when he opened it, I remember the stepfather said, you know, just make sure you're responsible with it. And he goes, he looked at the stepfather, he goes, I can do whatever I want with it as long as I'm responsible. And his stepfather said, yeah, as long as you're responsible, you know, use it properly or whatever, and we'll go shooting and whatever, but you got to be responsible with it. So Ace, I'll never forget this, he went ahead and took this rifle that was very expensive, walked over to the trash can, threw it out in the trash. And, of course, his stepfather and his mother freaked out because it's a very expensive, you know, gift. And, of course, this is where I get thrown into the mix. Because, you know, Ace said, do you know what guns have done to his life? Pointing at me, because I lost a friend or whatever. And he goes, he doesn't like them. I don't like them. You said I got to be responsible with it. It's going right in here. You can take it back and get something else because I'm not using no gun. So so I give him a lot of credit for that. But, I mean, of course, this is part of the reason why we got a lot of, you know, the butting of the heads with different family members, because this is one of those scenarios where Ace, you know, chose my belief over guns over his own mother and stepfather's choice of wanting him to be a hunter, I guess. Needless to say, he ended up getting a diver's license, divers, as in deep sea diving, instead, which is something he actually did want to do. Again, he was the adventurer. And, you know, a lot of the times we'd get roped into doing these adventures together as we got older. He was who I went with shark diving the three times I went. We went bungee jumping twice. The first time was on a whim. We were driving to get – actually, we were looking at snakes, I think. And we were going through Rhode Island, and we had seen that they were doing bungee jumping off this bridge. And we said, oh, he goes, wait, you want to go bungee jumping? I'm like, what, right now? And I'm like, all right, why not? You know, this is the things that we did. But also, you know, for example, I was in a bowling league. This goes to show you when you have loyalty to your family and when you're a family member. I was part of a bowling league, and I was on a team. And I had been bowling when, you know, I was doing pretty well in this team or whatever. And I had got a phone call. This is, you know, Ace had already gotten his, you know, license or whatever, and he was driving. He also had a motorcycle license. I'm not overly fond of motorcycles or whatever. But no, I'm not going to keep him from doing his thing. He likes motorcycles. He likes to do that BMX thing. And one of his big things was to do the Demolition Derby. He did all of those things and the races, the cars, and all that fun stuff. But anyway, I remember he got into his first motorcycle accident. He got in. He got pretty messed up, and the doctor had called me first. And Adam was 18, I think, at the time. He was 17 at the time, Adam, because I was 19. He was 2 years younger than me. So I was 19, and Adam was 17. So his mother technically would have been still his guardian. But what ended up happening was because of, you know, he was old enough to put in his own little thing, emergency contact thing. He had the doctors, you know, call me first to tell them about what happened, to, you know, make sure I was there rather than his own mother. So, of course, you know, I got the phone call from him, and out of respect for her, I called her to let her know first. And then I called D-Rock and then Pam or Pooh Bear. And then we went down to the hospital. We were there with Ace, and I was there with him until he recovered, to be honest with you. And, of course, his mother wasn't overly happy that they called us before him. And the doctor explained it's how, you know, it's a patient's right who they get to choose at his age. She didn't understand how that could be, that someone who wasn't a blood relative. And then Ace said F4L, and that's how that went. Again, these are the things that we kind of endure. But this is kind of how that works. You see how that works? Like, if you have a family member and you know that they're in an accident, you drop everything, you're there. Now, I was in the middle of that bowling league. And the people who were in the league with me, they, wait a minute, you're leaving right now? And I ended up leaving the game early because my friend was just in the motor, my brother was in a motorcycle accident. And I needed to go to the hospital. And it didn't matter how the bowling team was doing. We were doing really well. But guess what? My brother goes in a motorcycle accident. I'm leaving this game to go to my brother. And that's what I did. Because that's the loyalty. That's what you have when a family member gets hurt. You go to your family member. So that's kind of how that began. That's kind of the strength of that. Now, fast forward to the birth of social media. Because at this point, the five of us already established what an F4L is. And our group has grown, and people understood it. And of course, we had quite a bit of people who didn't like it as well, or didn't understand it. So we had both. But then what ended up happening was the birth of social media. In the early stages of MySpace. Admittedly, I'm always late to the party for all these things because I was busy. I mean, I had graduated high school. I've been at wrestling school already at this point. And I was already establishing myself and fulfilling a lot of the things I wanted to have done. And, you know, my F4L brothers and sisters were right there with me every step of the way. They were at most of my wrestling shows. They were the only showed up my high school graduation ceremony and everything else they were part of. They were all there for those things. They traveled to some of my early wrestling matches. Those were into the wrestling. One was. And I remember we started even watching. D-Rock and I would start the Walker Texas Ranger game where, you know, back at watching the old TV show on Saturday, we'd watch the show. And, you know, we'd come up with a different, like, thing. Every time Chuck Norris did a Chuck kick or did the Chuck look or did a Chuckism, you'd have to take a sip of soda pop. This, years later, I guess people would consider a drinking game. We just thought it was something fun to do. We used soda pop, by the way, because I didn't drink and neither did he. We were all teenagers. Anyway, I don't know. That was just a funny little thing that we did growing over the time. But anyway, back to social media. So, you know, I was on MySpace and I didn't really know much about it. And of course, Ace and D-Rock and Pooh Bear, they're all into those things. And I got in, again, I'm late to all these things. So I was on MySpace and everyone else has already been established with MySpace already. So I get on there and, you know, I did it as a way to meet fans. And I was, you know, establishing myself as a wrestler. And I wanted to reach out to my fans who were out there and also my other friends who were wrestlers or other people in Hollywood who I wanted to, you know, the thing with. I had what they called a celebrity account on MySpace, which really anybody could.
So, you know, all of those things. And, you know, I started meeting some people, and I met a friend of mine, this young man from Wales. His name is Sean. Sean Parfait, to be honest with you. Or Crip Boy, I should say, for short. And I would meet Crip Boy as one of those wrestling fans, and I would, you know, answer questions from him. And I told him about the F4L. And he was so touched by it and so moved by the F4L, what it is. He loved it. He was into, you know, digitally making music, and he also liked to promote bands and stuff. And he was from Wales, which is obviously not the United States. And, you know, through social media, through MySpace, and then through YouTube, I started reaching out to these people like himself and Jordan Jensen, who's a singer from Australia. Troy Sivan, who was in South America, Australia, now in America. You probably know him better. You know, now he's in America doing big things. And these are people who at one point supported, or still do, support the F4L lifestyle. Sean, his Crip Boy's brother, Kieran, got involved, you know, heard about the F4L lifestyle. He was involved with the F4L lifestyle. So these are people who live the F4L way. And Crip Boy was so moved by the F4L movement. With the birth of Facebook came the F4L fan page, I guess, and credited me as the leader and the founder. And I guess I would be considered leader since everyone else is no longer around much. And I was, you know, moved by that. And it's always something that stuck in me. And I've kept the F4L alive thanks to social media, thanks to him and other people. So also I learned that the F4L, and the model of what the F4L is, it was starting to travel. It started out, you know, locally, and then people in different parts of the United States would follow the F4L. Now I had friends in Wales and the UK, grew to Australia, South Africa, Canada, South America, Brazil, Russia, Italy, Amsterdam. and all over the United States, Hawaii. So we've reached, you know, it started out as a little thing that we started because we were tired of how our families were and how we wanted to have a lifestyle where we could you know, live those ways with love, caring, compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. And we wouldn't feel bad about doing so, be ridiculed. The other thing we do is we're not afraid to show our emotions and tell each other we love them because it's your brother, your sister. Why wouldn't you tell your brother, your sister, you love them? We hug each other. We love each other. And it doesn't matter. When we had families, we knew that growing up, we had families. We already decided prior to us having our own families that we would, you know, introduce them to the F4L lifestyle. And, you know, finding the right person to understand what it is was you know, an issue in its own sight. Myself, you know, I've gone on the record and I've had a few different girlfriends. But my wife was one of the people who really, you know, endured upon the F4L lifestyle and, you know, really lives it. And she still uses it to this day. And the kids, of course, you know, they took the oath and they also live the F4L way. My daughter really is huge into the F4L. She's a very social butterfly and her friends are very close to her. And she sees them as sisters and whatever, and brothers or whatever. And my son has a very close, you know, relationship with his family as well, but also with us, as we're all each other's F4L. And the other fun part is, and technicality goes, is if you're part of the F4L model, then you're our family. And in essence, we have F4L family members all over the world, and makes us the largest family in the history of families, and it's also a positive family rather than a negative one. So that's the origin of what the F4L is and how it began. Hopefully you guys were able to kind of pick up on a lot of it. I know I had to go back and forth between stories to get you guys to where it is, but this is Throwback Thursday in the F4L style. Best way to do it is talk about old F4L stories. Because all honesty, the only important parts of my life has to do with different parts of the F4L. Really, you know, my wife and my kids being part of the F4L, of course, they're, you know, obviously part of most of my biggest joys. You know, a lot of the good things I've had in my life is because of the F4L. And being viewed and, you know, called and revered as the F4L leader is quite interesting. And despite, you know, whatever else. I think, what does it mean to be a leader versus a follower? And the thing about, I like to tell people is I'm not a leader. I'm just, you know, a person who tells it how it is, and I fight for it. I stand up for it, and I educate people about it who maybe need it. I can tell when someone needs the F4 lifestyle in their life. Most people come from broken homes. When they take the F4L creed and they live the F4L way, well, now you have a family. You have people who understand you, who aren't afraid to tell you they love you and care about you, reach out to you whenever you need it. And then also you don't feel guilty about reaching out to them, because I've gotten phone calls all hours of the day from people. Back in, way back in the day, I used to get calls from Ace all the time. Hey, you know this, or Pooh Bear might reach out to me, D-Rock, and then go for goes forth. Everyone can go to someone, and there's always someone there to chat with, you know. Those are those good times. You know, honestly, you know, looking back, we talked about people, you know, trying to figure out who the friends are, the real ones versus the fake ones. I told you that real friends don't kick me down, they help you up. Well, there's been a time in my life that I've, even though I still believe that's how it should be, there has been a few different times that I myself have, you know, had to put those on hold, because part of being in the world is you have a heart. You have to give someone some trust, even though you have to earn a great deal of it. I still give more. I'm probably more trusting and forgiving than anybody else is, being F4L. But I also like to say on the same thing, is that once you cross over to that thing where I don't like you anymore, or if you prove yourself to be not worthy of the F4L model or a negative individual, then that's even worse, because you don't exist in my world, which can sometimes, you know, those people who are in that category probably view me as being kind of a jerk. Because they don't exist. So if I'm walking down the street, for example, this is a great example. If I'm walking down the street and I see one of those people who I'm not fond of, I don't like them. They don't exist in my world. So if they say hello to me, I just keep walking. I don't acknowledge them. But then like a foot or two up, I'll see someone who I do get along with, or a complete stranger who might say hello or whatever. And I'll say, hey, how you doing? As if the person never said anything to me, because that's how it is. And I think that's even more punishable, more hurtful than anything else. I think that's the best punishment for someone, is to just not include them in your life. A lot of my blood I've done that with. If you get to be that point, I'm all set. I don't need you in my life. I have plenty of people who are positive people in it. And as I've said, I've had times where I've had to learn this over time, and it took me a little longer sometimes in some relationships. Unfortunately, I have 43 minutes left, and I don't even know if I could fit in, you know, all of these stories. But if I give you the clip notes, but instead of giving you the clip notes, I'm just going to put it like this. When you have friendships at some point, it's important to know when they're getting toxic. It's also important to know when it's okay. And I'm telling you, it's okay to stop being friends with people who aren't, you know, living to your standards or their own. If you have people who you're friends with just because you went to school with them back in the day, but you don't see them, or they haven't really moved on in their life, they're not supportive individuals, well, they're just kind of dragging you down, and you're not going to get anything out of that relationship. And if you have a friend that you had since high school who you were really good friends in high school, but since then, maybe they don't talk to you on a regular basis, maybe they don't reach out to you, maybe you've reached out to them, or maybe they, you know, break plans over and over again because of whatever and whatever. That's another one of those signs. It's time to move on from that friendship. People who know me know that I've gone out of my way to help everyone I could in various different ways. And I've come to learn over the times that some of that has been accepted and some of that has been reciprocated, but sometimes it has not. It's been in essence, it's been proven and shown to me that it's been more of the case of people taking advantage of my kindness rather than me, you know, being friendly and nice, which is how it looks and how it is. For example, when I go to shows, when there are shows to go to, concerts and plays and, you know, whatever, if I have time and I have time from off from work or whatever,
I'm one of those individuals. I can't go to something alone. I've done it once, maybe. I wasn't fond of it. I'm a social individual. I like to share those experiences with my family, the F4L. So if I have an extra ticket, I'll bring someone with me, which I always have an extra ticket because that's what I do purposely. In the past, I've taken coworkers to wrestling shows. I've taken people to conventions, paid for everything on the convention, the tickets for the show, the hotel. The only thing they're required to do is get anything they're going to get at the show. Other than that, I usually used to cover everything on that. That's changed since then, thanks to my wife smarting me up. you know, a lot of the things, you know, I would do for other people, and now, you know, I was finding that a lot of that wasn't reciprocated. I'm not saying I do it because, you know, I'm expecting someone to say, hey, but in the same sense, you know, it's nice once in a while to, you know, be included instead of being the one who always is responsible for bringing it to happen. If I don't do it, it doesn't happen. And that's what I've come to learn. I used to get together with my brothers at least twice a year for their birthdays and then around the holidays. Because for me personally, when it comes to like gifts and stuff like that, I always find it better to go to something rather than to give a physical gift. Because I feel like when you go to a show, whatever it is, a concert, a movie, a play, an event, you can remember that for the rest of your life. And whatever happens at that thing, that's a memory you're going to share for the rest of your time. But if you give someone like a watch or, you know, if they're a kid, a teenager, a toy or a book or something like that, it could get lost. You know, you could forget it somewhere. I don't know how many times I've moved from a different location. I've lost something that, you know, an actual physical thing that I've lost, and it's been very tragic and sad to me. But the memories I have are still embedded in my brain of when I got those things. That can't be taken away. But, you know, that's partly why I believe it's better to take people places for their birthdays or a gift rather than to give them some little trinket that they could lose or whatever. And I still do that on occasion. Just right now, there's not a lot we can do because of everything going on, but that's something I'm going to reconvene once things get going again. One of my favorite memories together was taking my family, my wife and my kids, to their first concert, which, you know, my wife, her first, I'm amazed that was her first actual concert that I had to bring her to. But I guess I picked a good show since it was Def Leppard and REO Speedwagon and, yeah, I'm having to ask her because I don't remember. First concert, REO Speedwagon, Def Leppard, and who? Tesla, that's right. Thanks, Tesla. So granted, that was their first concert. And of course, I've been to that venue many times with multiple people prior to this. But this was the first time in that venue that I went to. We got comped. I've never been comped in that building. I didn't even think that was a thing. But apparently, you know, where we were, I guess they had plenty of seats that were available that were good seats. And they moved us like five rows from the stage. So, you know, we weren't going to complain about that. But my wife and my kids' first show was Def Leppard, Tesla, and REO Speedwagon. Fortunately, our kids have good music taste, so they were into that show. Not all kids are into that stuff, but our kids kind of like that kind of music anyway. So it worked out well, and that's a memory that they'll last. You know, even if, you know, my son fell asleep during one of the show, one of the songs, and, you know, for one of those groups, didn't matter. Everyone still had a fun time, and it's one of those things. When Motley Crue made the announcement that they're going to be returning, and they were going to be doing it with Motley Crue is going to be returning and doing their comeback tour with Def Leppard again, and this time with Poison and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and that's a pretty good lineup right there. Actually, and when they announced that number one, Motley Crue is coming back, because I've seen Motley Crue prior to them, and they were a phenomenal. That's a great show live. I was there at their farewell tour, so I thought it was fitting to see their comeback tour. And they were with Def Leppard, which is a family favorite of ours anyway, and Poison and Joan Jett and the Blackheart. So that's a huge stacked card right there. And of course, when I heard that news, my son heard me, you know, yell out loud. So I was excited. And then, you know, when I told him about the show, he was like, yeah, we're going. My son, who's not overly fond of pyrotechnics, admittedly, we spent this going back a few years. When he heard that the fact that those groups are getting together, he said, yeah, we're going to go regardless. So that's a plan that's on the horizon. That's going to happen eventually. But, you know, that's kind of a thing, you know. So that's stuff that we do as the F4L. But, you know, this is why I believe in bringing people places rather than, you know, giving them a gift, because that's just what I believe is more memorable. That's just me. But Crip Boy in Wales, we stayed in contact for quite a long time. It's been a little bit since I've heard from him and his brother in Wales, and I'm hoping they're doing all right. So if they happen to listen to the podcast, I hope they're doing well. But, you know, I still consider them much F4L brothers, and they still live it. And it's grown since then, and a lot of it is because of Crip Boy, who got the message to go even further. So I appreciated all of that. And sadly, the rest of the F4L, I couldn't give them shout-outs because they're not around right now. But partly what we believe in the F4L is our friends don't really die, per se. Physically, they might not be with us anymore, but the way we believe it is that even when they're not physically with us, we keep their memories alive, and they live in our hearts, our minds, our bodies, and our souls. So as long as we still have them there, they can never truly die. Now, on the show Dream Masters, for example, on YouTube, that's kind of how that works, and that's why that exists, because there are people on the show who are no longer alive, per se, people like Stan the Man Lee. But they were so important to both our lives, because, you know, my kids loved Stan Lee. My son was hugely affected by it. And, of course, you know, people who are comic book fans will also felt the wrath of that. So, of course, that's why he's there. And there are other people who are maybe not longer alive who are on that roster because of the influence that they've had in our lives and whatnot. Because there's an old quote from one of my favorite movies, and even though it's a comedy, whatever, but the quote is great. Heroes are remembered, but legends never die. I know that's partly the quote, but that's the one part I remember the most of that. That's from, of course, Sandlot, in case you guys don't know. Spoken by, of course, fictitiously by Babe Ruth. So that's something I kind of remember, and that's something we believe in the F4L as well, that the heroes we have a part of our lives, they're heroes. But legends, they are, because they'll never die, because they live through us. And I don't know. It's just really, it's sad when our friends are longer there, but it's also when you sit like I am now and you tell stories about these people that were so part of your life, that's formated and were your family, you can still feel them with you. And you can still, you know, they're still not truly gone because they're still part of the society. They're still talked about and they're still relevant just as much as they were when they were physically alive. But, yeah, a lot of people, since I only have a few minutes left here, half an hour, maybe I could tell you some fun stories that we've had in the F4L. For example, I told you about how the bungee jumping thing happened. It was on a whim because we were going to do that. And I told you the story about Adam Ace with the shotgun, but I don't know how many people actually wanted to go swim with sharks. We did this three times, the two of us. And by the way, not everyone in the F4L has the same likes and dislikes. So, you know, Pooh Bear, D-Rock and all of that, they wouldn't be caught dead going to the ocean with a bunch of sharks. But me and Ace were the ones who, Ace did it and he needed somebody to go with him. So there you go. It was because of Ace, I got my diver's license. But admittedly, he had his both licenses. We got the diver's license together, but he got his driver's license for cars and whatever way before I did. city guy, and I'm pretty confident with either walking or taking the train, bus, whatever. But I can drive as well. I prefer driving now more than anything because it's my place where I can do my best thinking, actually. But I remember we told the rest of the FO we're going to go shark diving. Ace said, hey, I need someone to go shark diving with me. They need at least two more people to book this thing. The shark diving party that it was going to, it was going to be right off of Plymouth Harbor, actually, not Cape, but Plymouth. And the idea was there were going to be little bluefin sharks. This is something they've done a lot. And it was something that they needed at least two or three people more to do this event. And I guess, fortunately, Ace said that, you know, they had everyone but one. And he wanted to do this. So I said, well, okay. I've gone shark diving. I've gone swimming, deep sea diving before. And part of to do so, you need to kind of have that clearance, which I did. And I had the equipment. So, and I had the time. So he booked it. And we ended up going shark diving the first time. And at first, you know, when... A lot of people were like, oh, no, you're going shark diving. I was telling people, you're out of your mind. You're crazy going shark diving. Those things are going to rip you apart. And here's how I looked at it. I kind of have this feeling. I still believe this. And, you know, I feel a lot of things, kind of being someone who's been misunderstood a lot of my life. I always find there's usually a hidden story or there's always more to the story with various animals or things. I don't judge things because of what everyone else says. I have to see it for myself, but I give it the same respect as I would anything else as well. So sharks are no different. Sharks, I felt, were like snakes, and snakes I've had a pretty good relationship over the years, and actually I love animals in general. Me being someone who also was, you know, when we went shark diving, I've already competed in high school swimming, and so I was a good swimmer anyway. And I already had the clearance to dive anyway. But when it came to animals, I also went on the notion that with the exception of cats for some reason, most animals like me anyway. And a shark is a fish. And, you know, the way I went in with it was, you know, I'm going to show the shark the respect I give everything else. And I'll be aware and, you know, hopefully that'll work out and I'll follow the instructions. So that's what I did. That's what you're supposed to do. So we showed up, and it was six of us going to this shark dive off of Plymouth Harbor. And it was me and Ace and you know, a few other people, a couple, and then, you know, some individual people. And the idea was we were going to go swim with these little sharks. If anything really big came in, we felt uncomfortable, let them know right away, and they'll keep the boat really close by, and da 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 da. If anything really gets big, then, you know, we're going to have to, if they felt we're really going to be in danger, they'll pull us out or they'll, you know, tell us to get out of the water if things got really crazy. Fortunately, we do not see any great white sharks. I say fortunately because I do have, even though I was confident enough to go swimming in the ocean, I showed the respect and whatever. And even though I still believe that a lot of things are misunderstood. And it doesn't matter anyway. I'm not going to go swimming. My theory is I'm not going to go swimming with anything bigger than me. The sharks that we were swimming with, they were probably about 4 feet, four to six feet at that time. I was 6 feet anyway. A great white shark, I would not feel going to go in there with. But I also wouldn't go swimming with a whale shark, which are very peaceful animals. But they're gigantic, if you've never seen one. I won't go swim with a basking shark, which are the basking sharks eat plankton, which is what humpback whales eat. I won't eat that either, but I won't swim with that either. I'm not stupid. I won't go swim with something too big. Even though, you know, kind of use your head in some sense. But we went diving three times. Each of those three times, you know, we swam with pretty much the same school of sharks. They were little blue tip sharks. Might have been a nurse shark, which wasn't very big, but it was very small animals. They weren't very big fish, and there were other fish down there too. But when the sharks are around, there's no other fish around because, I mean, they're not stupid either. But so we went swimming with these sharks, and it was fun. And, you know, they had us feed the sharks different parts and, you know, whatever you were comfortable with. You know, of course, you didn't want to get the shark too close. You weren't allowed to go approach the shark. But if the shark approached you, there were certain ways you were supposed to handle yourself, how you approach yourself, how do you swim. And I kind of I got a rush out of it the first time, so much so that I said, we're going to do this again, right? Because at first I was hesitant. I was like, I don't know. And Ace was our gung-ho about it because he didn't – when it came to Ace and he had to doing something, he didn't think twice about it. If he wanted to do it, he's just going to do it. And this was the case where he needed me to go with him in order to get it to happen. So that's what happened there. The second time I booked it and we went diving the second time and the third time, I don't remember who did what, but we ended up going the third time for the whim of it, I guess. So three times I went swimming with sharks. And none of those three times, that obviously, as I'm speaking right now, I have both my arms and my legs. I have all my fingers and my toes. The only injuries I've ever sustained has been in the wrestling ring, so with a couple odds and ends in between. Other than that, I've never been attacked by a shark, which is nice to know. In fact, with the exception of a cat once in a while, I've never been attacked by an animal to begin with. Yeah, so there's that. But it was one of those fun experiences that you talk about. Not everyone can. Not everyone wants to go swim with sharks or would. But I can say, honestly, that, you know, the way I had it in my head is that this is their house, and I'm a guest in their house, and I'm just going to do what I'm allowed to do in the house. We teach our kids to mind the rules or whatever the rules are in the house. It would be the same thing if I'm going into the ocean with the sharks, because that's their house. And I'm a guest in it. And I think a lot of the times people are naive and they go into the ocean. Oh my goodness, there's a shark. No kidding. Newsflash. There's a shark in every ocean. And just like every river, every pond, every ocean, there's going to be some type of animal in there that's going to have teeth. Fun fact. That goes with freshwater for that matter too. If you go freshwater, you got to worry about pickerels. Have you ever got, or a snapping turtle or things of that nature? Snapping turtles are no joke either. They'll take your toe off. There's a reason they call them such. But, also the other fun fact when we went shark diving, we actually saw some skates. Some skates went swimming with us. For those of you guys who don't know, a skate is like a smaller version of a stingray. It's not very big. It's not as big as a stingray. They were a little, it's like a little bit of a, it's a, they call them a skate. I call it a mini ray, but a skate is like a stingray, only a smaller version of it, a very smaller version, like probably about the size of maybe a seagull. Obviously, I'm bigger than a seagull, so a skate wasn't going to bother me either. Actually, seagulls are annoying. I call them flying sea rats. Anyway. I like animals. I didn't say I had to, you know, like them to an extent. you know, I'm not overly fond of seagulls because I view them like pigeons. Pigeons and seagulls to me have the same kind of a moral value of a rat or a mouse. I'm not overly fond of them either to me because I have always had a snake growing up. They're snake food. Obviously, I can't feed a bird to a snake. Well, I could, but I haven't done that. And I won't. And I've talked before about, you know, proper snake and reptile treatment before. Ace, by the way, actually, all of the F4L in general, we're all big fans of the snakes, and they always had no problem with any of my snakes. Actually, it was Ace who took care of Damien for a little while I was on the road and stuff. Ace would take care of it, or D-Rock sometimes would take Damien, my first snake, for a little while. And then when Cole came into the picture, we had a big birthday party for Cole, even though he was older than me. I've told that story before about my snake being older than me. And we'd make jokes about how, you know, the old man, how he's chaperoning the party. It's a snake. We ordered a pizza one time. We said, Cole, it's a birthday party for Cole. And of course, when the pizza guy came, the joke was, is that, you know, we had it in the, this is what we did. Yeah. I know you're not going to like this one, but anyway, We told the pizza, the house the, where we ordered the pizzas from, we told them when they get there, because you know how you can give them instructions. They're supposed to ask for Cole to get to make sure the and ask Cole if the food was ready, is good when it got there. So, of course, when the pizza guy would come to the house and say, yeah, I'm supposed to ask Cole how the pizza is. And then Cole would be my snake. So I'd, whoever was at the door, oh, hold on, I'll get Cole for you. And they'd go to the door with Cole. And depending on who the pizza person was, they either appreciated it or they pretty much did not. But we gave them the good tips, so it was all in fun.
At least we thought it was, anyway.
Yeah.
So that was a cool time. It was a cool time indeed. So it was how it was. So it was enjoyable. It was. We're also big prankers in the F4L. We do a lot of those things. We rib each other. We rib other people. As far as good rib story, I mean, being from the wrestling world, you know there's ribs there somewhere. Ribs are jokes, by the way, if you guys don't know. Which I find it funny that WWE put a character in the 2020 version called Ribby. I think that's funny because that's something you call a joke in wrestling. So anyway, I digress. Yeah. See, I got a smile on my face. I'm talking about the old school F4L days, and we're doing Throwback Thursday. Honestly, whenever I'm having a hard time, this is just in general. When I find myself feeling kind of bad about things or feeling kind of down or sad or whatever, sometimes I look back at one of those times, like when I went shark diving or when one of these pranks that we pulled on someone. And when I do that, I'm instantly brought back to joy and happiness, and I don't feel as bad. I'm saddened at one point because those people aren't there, but in the same sense, because they told that story, now they're alive and fresh in my mind. And, you know, it makes me appreciate the time we have in life. Those are guys who don't know. There's some people, there's a couple people on the roster on Dream Masters who you probably have never seen before, who I thought it was only a fair time that they were part of the show. That is Sleepy Bear and Triple D. They're current reigning F4L Dream Masters Tag Team Champions. What you don't know about Sleepy Bear and Triple D, they're based on real people. Triple D, of course, is my friend Rick. And then, of course, Sleepy Bear is my friend Chris. Chris is hopefully he's doing really well. I haven't seen him in a little while, but they were two of my F4L that came in later in life. They were older friends of mine, and really cool guys. And Chris, whose nickname was Sleepy Bear, because one, he liked to sleep, but two, he was a big guy, strong, but he was also very friendly, kind of lovable. Like to make jokes, like to have fun, but also he was very simplistic. Like he didn't need television or anything like that. He liked to read. He was billed as a genius. He is still a very intelligent individual. Chris, of course, everyone has their own ups and downs. Everyone has their own things that they're facing, but Chris was a very smart individual. And Triple D, which was Rick, unfortunately, he's no longer with us anymore. They were roommates, by the way, which is why they're paired together. And they were always together. But Triple D, which is Rick. Rick, sadly, we lost when he was 31, I believe. He was a few years older than me when he passed away. He was going in for a very simple, you always hear these stories about these simple operations. But I've come to find out in time that even those simple operations, it's really important to spend as much time with people as much as you can, because you don't know when it's going to end at any point. And Rick is one of those reminders of those instances where Rick was 31 years old. He went in with a simple appendicitis. Everyone has appendicitis, and you've heard of someone, oh, I got to get my appendix out. Well, Rick went to get his appendix out, and unfortunately, as he was getting up to use the bathroom, when Chris was going to pick him up from the hospital because he was going in for his appendix hurting, he ended up falling because he had a
and the hemorrhage that went from his leg to his brain. And sadly, we lost Rick at 31 years old. And I don't know anybody who met Rick who never liked him. He was a really funny kid, really funny guy, big guy. But he lost a lot of weight, and he was doing really good things. He was a very hard worker. He was always working. He loved music. Big fan of the Insane Clown Posse. He introduced me to a lot of that group. And way back in the when, me and Rick were actually roommates for a while. When I was in the middle of getting ready to be to get my first place, me and Rick were roommates. And he was a little older than me. He worked, and I was still finishing high school. And I remember that, since we shared the room, he would come home from working at Stop and Shop, I think, at that time. And he would come home, and this is back in the old days of when he had rental stores. And he'd come home with these various movies and television, various movies and whatever. We'd watch those. And, since we're in the same room and he had the television, I guess I had no choice but to watch it or listen to it as I was sleeping. One or the other. But the other fun part is when it came to sleeping at night. Now, I'm someone who can sleep with music. I do like music once in a while when I'm trying to sleep. And as I've already mentioned, I do have insomnia anyway. So when I can sleep, there's certain ways and tricks I need to do so. Rick also used music to sleep, but his music choice was a little bit different than mine. when I'm going to sleep, I usually listen to like Magic 106.7, which is a radio station local, which is like all pop hits and whatever, where Rick would listen to Marilyn Manson, the Insane Clown Posse, Henry Rollins, Guar. So very different music taste. Now, prior to me, while I was with Rick, I never listened to music at night. But when he would come home and his nighttime music was Marilyn Manson or Insane Clown Posse or one of these other things, that's what I got to go to sleep to. Spoiler, some of those things are harder to listen sleep to than others. STP, Pearl Jam, not Pearl Jam. So a lot of those groups, I don't know if they're necessarily meant to go to bed at night with, but Rick found a way to make it happen. But, I actually owe it to him for learning who the Insane Clown Posse was prior to me even working with them. I got to work with the Insane Clown Posse for their wrestling show and whatever. And I have no problem with the Insane Clown Posse, but it was actually Rick who introduced me to the notion who they even were. Not generally my genre, but, Rick was what they considered a juggalo, which, that existed. Rick had to teach me that. And Chris, was an individual. He still is an individual. He doesn't believe in television. He doesn't watch television. When he was younger, he might have watched something on TV, like, whatever, old school TV show. But he would watch wrestling. That's one thing. He liked football. He liked, football, baseball, wrestling, things like that. But that was here and there. He did like movies. That was something he enjoyed. But he didn't like regularly watch regular television. Wasn't into that. He would rather read a book, which I think is what led to him being as smart as he is. He had the college degree for English. He was tutoring people. He would do calculus and these math equations just for fun. And that's just something he just does. And it's amazing that he is he's a wicked smart individual. So if I ever needed to learn something or I needed to, figure out an equation, I would go to Chris for that because Chris would be able to break it down for me, explain to me how it worked. Chris also was someone who I could show different on my work, my writing works to that, because he was also a poet, so he liked poetry and stuff. But he also was able to grammarly correct things. But also, he also taught me with poetry, sometimes you purposely don't, there's certain things you do in poetry, a lot of people don't know, the certain punctuations or how you use certain things that, fit the poem, it doesn't necessarily mean it's grammarly correct, and it's done that way on purpose. Chris was one that showed me and taught me that. So that was fun stuff. So I got about 12 minutes, and I want to again say I'm late for logging in today. I meant to be here at 5:30. It's 6:18. My wife was nice enough to surprise me with food, so that was nice of her. So I want to say thanks to her and whatever.
And I got my water, which I'm also happy about. So I'm drinking the water as I'm still talking to her. I'm talking to you guys. So I'm going to end this early because, you know, I've kind of followed the mission that I was supposed to. We talked about, you know, the F4L, and we talked about the origin. I think you guys know a little bit more. And kind of the throwback, one little thing I want to share is one thing I always wanted in my younger days was to get a house. And oddly enough, my dream house was the Winchester Manor. And those people who don't know, the Winchester Manor is a house in California, which was constructed by old Lady Winchester, who was the heir. She was a widow of the gentleman who invented the Winchester rifle. And she had created this house in California, or built this house in California, that not only would be for her ghost, but for herself. But she had to build it so she could confuse the ghosts so they couldn't find her. It has like tons of rooms in there. There's like many rooms. There's many hallways. You've probably heard about it if you're into the paranormal stuff. I mean, like, they have doors that open up to nothing. They have a stairway that goes literally into the roof. These are things that she initiated putting into this house so that they couldn't find her, the ghosts, or the people that she believed was coming to haunt her because of the people who were killed by the Winchester rifle, which is how that story works. I always wanted that house because I figured, hey, I can get all my friends in one place and we can just live there. You know, this is what you think about when you're a teenager. Buy the Winchester Manor and move all your friends into one house. And with so many rooms, yeah, I could definitely fit everyone there at that point. And then have all the parties, because that's what we do too. We like to have fun and, you know, party it up and hang out and have fun and while doing our own thing. Well, the fun trivia thing is I always said I would call wherever that home was F4L headquarters. Wherever the F4L were living was the F4L headquarters. So me, for example, when I'm here, this is the F4L headquarters. This is why this podcast has the name, because this is your home as much as it is I'm. You're here on this podcast. This is the home of the F4L. In essence, it's the F4L headquarters, which is where the name comes from, which is what I was going to call the house when I build everyone in. Fun trivia. But I'm going to end this in about a few seconds, but I just want to say thank you again, everyone, for joining. And I'm sorry again for missing a few. Tomorrow, by the way, I'm going to be back for throwback. Sorry, tomorrow is our all-new TGIF4L Friday weekend kickoff. So make sure you tune in tomorrow as we're going to be discussing the WWE Royal Rumble and a slew of other things to get you ready for the weekend. Start the weekend off right with a little fun and enjoyment. And who knows, maybe I'll have a guest or two on tomorrow night to talk about the Royal Rumble or whatever. Well, wherever you guys are, it is Thursday. We went way back in time. We threw all the way back there. So for all you guys out there, wherever you guys are, may all your dreams come true. You just got jazzed by Stevens. Peace, everyone.